From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this edition, crisis in Caracas. Florida Congressman Ted Yoho is here on the latest out of Venezuela. And the vice chair of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, Gail Manchin, a fellow commissioner, joins me in studio to delve a little deeper into the commission's 2019 annual report on the international religious freedom front. Also, Travis Weber, vice president for policy here at the Family Research Council, will magnify one aspect of the report, which is identified as problematic, and that is the issue of apostasy, blasphemy, and anti-conversion laws, which many countries have. We'll talk about that. And we'll finally wrap up with Peter Sprigg, Senior Fellow for Policy Studies here at the Family Research Council, with an analysis of the Chamber of Commerce claim that the Equality Act is good for business. We'll talk about that later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com, if you're on Twitter. It is at T. Perkins. Let me remind you, folks, for those that might be interested to take a little vacation with some of the FRC team, we'll be going to Alaska this summer, July the 7th through the 14th. Not only will you have an opportunity to see just the beauty of Alaska, it's a great cruise, but I'll be joined by some of the FRC team. As I mentioned, General Jerry Boykin will be there, former Minnesota Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, Ken Blackwell, former ambassadors to the UN. We'll be giving a little bit behind the scenes of what's happening in addition to the great fellowship and the food, not to mention the food. Find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, the Associated Press is reporting that the anti-government demonstrators, and I'm quoting from them, clashed with troops loyal to Venezuela President Nicolas Maduro at an air base in the capital hours after the opposition leader, Juan Guaido, took to the streets in a bold and risky attempt to lead a military uprising against the embattled socialist. The early morning rebellion seems to have only had limited military support. This has been an unfolding situation. Where might it lead? Have we reached a crisis moment? Joining me now to talk about what's going on is Congressman Ted Yoho. He represents the 3rd District of Florida, and he serves on the Foreign Affairs Committee, and he just returned from South America. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, I know you have been on here a number of times in the last few months talking about Venezuela. Have we reached a crisis point there?
Oh, there is no doubt about it, Tony. We were down at the border in Calcutta and Venezuela, and to see the amount of people coming over, in the thousands a day, and 95% of them used to go back. Now the majority of them are staying, and, Colombia is getting overrun with, just the amount of people, the sheer numbers, there's medical conditions, there's all that stuff. And this is all man-made. It's perpetrated and created by nobody but Hugo Chavez. And then he passed that torch on to Maduro. And Maduro has taken a bad situation and made it worse by a factor of thousands. I mean, they're approaching 10 million percent. Get this, 10 million percent in inflation.
I mean, it's hard to even calculate that in terms of the impact. But what's happening as a result is that people are starving. The basic necessities of life are eluding them because of the inflation and the breakdown in services.
That, and we talked to families that were there, and it almost looked like there were Maduro spies in this group, and it was a soup kitchen. Where they feed right at 5,000 a day. We asked them if there were any jobs in Venezuela, and they said, no, there are no jobs. You can't find work. And for the few people that are working, they're getting on an average of $4, get this, $4 a month. And when the delegation asked, who do you feel is responsible for this? 100% of them said Maduro. They all know Maduro's done this. They want him gone. And there should be a peaceful transition to power. If you go by the Venezuelan Constitution, it clearly states that Juan Guaido is the legitimate president, and the National Assembly backs him, and over 60 countries are backing him, too.
So at what point, I mean, how much longer can this go on? I mean, the crisis has been escalating, humanitarian crisis, I should point out. I mean, people are literally lacking the basic necessities of life. I mean, how much longer can Maduro hold on?
I don't know. The problem is you've got Cuba backing him. In fact, he's got more Cuban soldiers around him than his own because he doesn't trust his own. So you've got the Castro regime around him as his security force. In addition, you've got Russia, and then you've got Morales out of Bolivia that are all sending his people in there. And then you've got China's got a hand in there and Iran. And these are all countries that are repressive regimes,
right,
that suppress their people. And these are the people that are backing Maduro, and they're okay with people suffering.
China, Mao Zedong, they
killed 80 million of their own people. And these are the people that are propping him up. And the beauty of this is, if there is a silver lining, the Venezuelan people knew liberty and freedom. They knew that just a few short years ago. And so that's something that once somebody tastes liberty and freedom, you can't take that away from them. Mm. And the fight of the Venezuelan people was, you could see they want that. And then I can't say enough about Colombia. With President Duque, we met with him over 2 hours. The massive effort that they have done to make sure people are getting fed. And then the world community, and of course, the United States with USAID. And it's a great humanitarian outpouring. But again, Maduro won't let the aid in. These people have to travel tens of miles, hundreds of miles to get a meal for a day.
Wow. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, Congressman Ted Yoho of Florida. He is a member of the House Committee on Foreign Affairs. We're discussing what is happening right now in Venezuela. You know, Congressman, it tells you a whole lot about who's propping Maduro up. I mean, if that's your friends, Iran, Cuba, Russia, that says a whole lot.
Really? It really does. And then you think of the foundational structure of most, over 90% of the countries in Central and Latin America. They're Christian value nations. The countries that are supporting Maduro are anything but a Christian valued nation. And I know we're on the side of God, and God's going to help us through this. I mean, we're doing the right things, and so is Guaido, and so is President Duque and the Colombian people. They're doing it for the right reasons.
I want to mention some of these other countries. Yesterday, the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, which I have the privilege of serving on, released its 2019 report. I'm going to ask you a question about that. But first, I mean, when you look at Venezuela and you look at where Chavez took it, where Maduro took them from a very prosperous country, a very oil-rich country, they have more oil reserves than Saudi Arabia. I mean, this is a wealthy country.
Any other country, yeah.
And they're at the top of the list. It's a socialist government. It was these socialist policies. Is this not a lesson for the United States as we have actually... You have colleagues in the Congress that are very much at home with socialist policies. In fact, we have potential presidential candidates espousing very similar policies.
They sure are. And, you know, when we ran for Congress, we asked people, the veterans and everybody that had taken an oath to defend this country against all enemies, foreign and domestic, we asked them that question. Did you take that oath to defend socialism or a constitutional republic? Not one person said socialism. And I thought when President Trump did the State of the Union and says we never have nor shall we ever be a socialist country. The problem I see in America is people forgot what kind of a country we are. We're a constitutional republic. And that provides for the gifts that we've been blessed with in this nation and the protections of our individual. And it empowers the individual, where, as I said before, those other governments suppress their people and they empower government. And that power and the money goes to the elite in government at the expense of the ordinary person.
And this should be Exhibit A for the American public as to what socialism will lead to. But I want to point to something else, and I mentioned the USURF report yesterday, because all of those countries that you mentioned lining up with Maduro also happen to be on, I think every one of them is on the Tier 1 list, the country of particular concern, the recommendations that we're making to the State Department, to Congress, and to the president. These are countries that engage in or tolerate the suppression of their people when it comes to religious freedom. So when you look at free economies and you look at prosperity and stability, you can't look at that absent of religious freedom.
No, you can't. You really can't. And you take China, for instance. In the Chinese Party Manifesto, it says that there is no higher entity on the planet or in the universe than the Communist Party. So they don't recognize a deity. The deity in China is the Communist Party and then Xi Jinping. And I applaud the Pope for going over there, but they're only going to have whatever Xi Jinping allows in that country. Nobody is able to challenge or second-guess the Communist Party or him. And that is something that we have unique in Western civilizations, that you know, we look to a creator. In our country, of course, you know, our rights come from a creator, and government's instituted by we the people to protect our God-given rights. That's unusual for a large portion of the world, and so we are so blessed. And if people want to doubt, or if they want to think they want to dabble in socialism, go in there, go to the border of Venezuela and Colombia, and then come back and realize the gift that we have been given through our founding fathers and the people that have fought to maintain what this country is.
And a gift that we must protect and cherish. One recommendation.
Generations.
Absolutely. One of the recommendations that USURF is making to Congress is that the Congress hold annual oversight hearings on the implementation of the International Religious Freedom Act and the Frank Wolf Act, as well as hearings on religious freedom. And I think in this context of what's happening in Venezuela and who's partnering with them, you know, I think this would be a great time for Congress to look a little deeper into the issue of religious freedom and who's abusing and who's not.
No, I think you're absolutely right. Frank Wolf did a tremendous job when they got that passed. And that's something that we should keep up. And I think you're right. I think it's time to highlight that. And, you know, because if we don't do that, what happens is it may not happen, you know, bluntly. Some places it will happen bluntly that you'll lose that freedom.
Yeah.
But it's an insidious insult on freedom of expression or freedom of religion. And if we allow that to start happening, you're going down a slope that will be very hard, if ever, to come back from. And so we cannot give up on this. And this is something that China, again, is the player that is stripping countries away from Western ideologies and offering their brand of socialism and the Chinese characteristics. And make no mistake about it, it's pure Chinese communism.
Right, and they're at the top.
Yeah, it takes away freedom of religion.
They're at the top of the list. Congressman, we're out of time. Congressman Ted Yoho, thanks so much for joining us. I know you're just back in the country, but thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate it. Keep up the great work.
All right. All right, folks, stay with us. We're coming back with Vice Chair of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, Gail Manchin. That's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
When you look at what is going on in our country and culture today, do you often ask, what can I do? Well, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on October 11th through 13th in Washington, D.C., and join thousands of Americans just like you who want to change the culture in a way that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Mike Pompeo, Kirk Cameron, Dana Loesch, and Ben Carson. In addition, there will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview, and informational sessions focused on the topics of life, religious liberty, the LGBT movement, national security, the realities of socialism, and more. On October 11th through 13th, stand with thousands of values voters to restore our great nation. Registration is now open. Don't miss the early bird price of $99. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy birthday.
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. As we've been discussing, the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom releasing its annual report, highlighting a number of countries that really engage in bad, what we would call bad behavior. Let me just read some of those to you, or actually list them out. But before I do that, let me just give you the definition. Now, this is a definition by statute of which we're to measure these countries. It is countries that engage in particularly severe violations of religious freedom, which would be systematic, ongoing, egregious violations of religious freedom, including violations such as torture or cruel, inhumane, or degrading treatment or punishment, prolonged detention without charges, causing the disappearance of persons by the abduction or clandestine detention of those persons, or other flagrant denial of the right to life, liberty, or the security of persons. And the recommendations that we make, the USCIRF Commission makes to the State Department, to the administration and Congress, is for 16 countries to be recommended as countries of particular concern based upon that definition: Burma, Central African Republic, China, Eritrea, Iran, Nigeria, North Korea, Pakistan, Russia, Saudi Arabia, Sudan, Syria, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, and Vietnam. And then there are 12 Tier 2 countries which don't meet the full criteria but are worth watching because they are areas of concern. Well, joining me now to talk about this is one of my fellow commissioners at the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, Gail Manchin. She was appointed by Senator Charles Schumer. Gail serves as the commission's vice chair. She is the former first lady of West Virginia. She has served as the president of the National Association of the State Boards of Education. She has been a voice for the challenges of rural education, poverty, and the responsibility of teachers, principals, students, and parents in raising student achievement. And now, through her role at USCIRF, she has expanded her advocacy on behalf of those who are in need of religious freedom at the global level, and her husband serves as the senator from the state of West Virginia, and she joins me now. Gail, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks so much for joining us. I want to talk a little bit about the report as we look at the significance of this report and the role that it plays. So just kind of, again, for our listeners, what role does this report play in terms of the policy of the United States on religious freedom internationally?
Well, I think the role the report plays goes back to the importance of having the United States Commission on International Religious Freedom. It was created not to duplicate or in any way take away from the power of the State Department, but rather to be a complement to it, that the State Department looks at every country in the world and looks at it from a global economic from that arena. And so the work that we do focused strictly on our mandate of international religious freedom allows us to then take those countries that are most egregious in their treatment of their people in terms of being able to worship freely and live their life of faith in the way they want to, then we can make recommendations to the State Department, which I think are vital, to help them understand then how they deal diplomatically with a country, particularly countries, again, that are being so egregious. So I think our work is extremely important in showcasing to the State Department not only the importance of respecting religious freedom, but also in helping them in their negotiations with these countries.
Commissioner Manchin, I want to hone in on one aspect that you said, which is a point of differentiation with what the State Department does on this issue, and that is the recommendations. The commission not only points to the problem in these 16 countries of particular concern, but then makes recommendations to the administration in one of the for each specific country, but then also kind of globally for the whole issue. And some of the top recommendations coming forth this year was for the administration to appoint a special advisor to the president on international religious freedom within the National Security Council staff, which goes back to the original legislation that was passed 20 years ago. This person would develop a government-wide strategy for promoting religious freedom abroad, prepare action plans for specific countries, and establish an interagency working group to oversee the implementation. How important is that?
Well, I think it's extremely important, Tony. As you know, when you have a person that is designated to do a specific job, in this case, around religious freedom, that heightens the importance of that arena. It certainly keeps it on the front burner, that person working with. And again, that'll be wonderful if this happens, to have that person to work specifically with. I think another one of the recommendations was the database that we actually have been mandated to create around our prisoners of conscience. So I think everything that we do in this fashion just brings more to the surface what we're doing, what's going on in the countries around the world, and how we can help be an advocate for the voice of freedom of religion.
Commissioner Manchin, we're just about up against a break, and I got several more questions. So I'm going to ask you to kind of stick around for the next segment here. Because when we come back from this break, I want to ask you about the composition of this commission is unique. It is a bipartisan 9-member commission, and the significance is that they all work together, which is unique for this this city. So I want to talk about that, and I also want to talk about what you have seen in your first year as you have been a commissioner. What has been the most enlightening experience, and what do you hope to accomplish here on the Commission for International Religious Freedom? So we're going to talk about that when we come back. Folks, Don't go away. We're going to come back and finish our conversation regarding the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom's annual report that was released yesterday with Commissioner Gail Manchin in just a moment. So don't go away. We're back right after this.
Jerry, what are you doing?
What? What does it look like I'm doing? I'm sitting on this bench enjoying my tea and reading the news.
You always tell me that I need to stand firm for faith, family, and freedom. Why aren't you standing?
Well, now with this new Stand Firm app, I can sit and stand at the same time. And if you got the Stand Firm app, you could learn something besides that garbage of peddling in public schools. You could listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. We're Tony and leaders on the Hill and other culture influencers weigh in on current events. You can read FRC's latest publications and articles responding to what's going on in the news, like this.
Oh.
You can play trivia and earn points for free prizes. You can even access all of FRC's publications directly to sharpen your mind and give you the ability to discern the thoughts and intentions of the heart.
I can be a mind reader?
Kid, that's from the Bible, the richest piece of literature on God's green earth.
Can I see this stand up? Wow, this would keep me informed. Visit frc.org/app to download FRC's Stand Firm app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. So glad that you are with us. The website, tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. Joining me in studio, one of my fellow commissioners on the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, Commissioner Gail Manchin, who also serves as the vice chair of the commission. We were discussing the report that came out yesterday about some of the recommendations being made to the administration. But I want to kind of step back from the policy recommendations, and I know we've talked about that. I'll talk a little bit more about that in our next segment when Travis Weber joins me. But I want to focus on something that was actually quite refreshing to me, and I'm still trying to really wrap my arms around it, and it is the fact that there's 9 commissioners, 5 Republicans, 4 Democrats, and people would think that we would be in a room like cats and dogs, but we work so well together. I cannot, in 1 year of meetings, I cannot recall one disagreement. Now, we've had very good conversations. We've had some disagreements and over issues, but we've worked through them. It's quite refreshing to me.
Well, it is refreshing when you see what's happened, not only in Washington, but it seems around our country, how polarized we've become. And it's unfortunate because I think if you sit around the table and think about what you have in common, we'd often be surprised that we share much more in common than we share in differences. And I think that's what we have done as a commission. We have focused on our mission,
right,
and our mandate.
Religious freedom. And so
religious freedom.
While there are commissioners that have a variety of opinions on different issues, on this issue of religious freedom, we all believe that every man, woman, and child should have a right to choose their faith, to have a faith or not to have a faith, to worship God, not to worship God. We believe they have that fundamental human right.
And I think we believe it very passionately. And so that oversteps any difference that we have. We have a diverse religions in our
group. We really do.
Nationality, ethnic, culture, and yet we all believe that that is a fundamental right.
Yeah, we're district. Probably the two that are the closest. You know, you're West Virginia, Louisiana.
Right.
You know, you come from the hills. I come from the swamps. I mean, you know,
yes.
we probably have more in common than the others. Let me ask you this. When it comes to you're coming up on 1 year of serving on this commission, what has been the most enlightening, the most surprising thing that you have seen or learned in this year as it pertains to religious freedom?
Well, as a, you know, the travels, and I think that is one of the very strong elements of this commission is our ability to travel to these countries. And so my first trip was to Indonesia. And what just really overwhelmed me as we met with political figures, religious clerics, is that they were very concerned about what the United States thinks of them and what we say about them and as we write our report. And so they want us to come and visit their country so they can prove to us that they are doing better or that they are going to try to step up to the plate on some of the recommendations we make.
I mean, that speaks to America's leadership role. And on this issue, it is so fundamentally important. I mean, if you think about this at this moment in time, America has the ability to advocate for a freedom that some people have only longed for.
Oh, yes. And you see, unless you've – I mean, I think serving on this commission just made that so abundantly clear to me. That and the fact that there are people around this world that are willing to sacrifice their lives and their freedom for their faith.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know. I think about myself. I'm wondering, would I be that strong? But we have these political – religious prisoners around the world, some of which we've adopted, and we've both been fortunate in one of yours, Reverend Brunson,
mm-hmm.
and just recently, Mohammed Ali Tahiri, one of my prisoners, was released. But it's just overwhelming to realize what sacrifices people will make trying to defend their faith and their right to that faith.
It reminds us, I mean, constantly reminds me of the fact that I need to remind people of what a precious right we have in this country. I know it's a God-given right, but to have a government that protects it and not tramples upon it is something that most people in the world do not have the opportunity to enjoy. Before, we're almost out of time. We got about another minute left. I want to ask you this, Commissioner Manchin. What do you hope to see over this next year as it pertains to religious freedom?
I hope that we can continue to work together as a commission to look at the recommendations we made this year in our report and hopefully next year to be able to evaluate if we have been able to make a difference in some of those countries. If we can take maybe a couple of those countries off of the watch
mm-hmm.
list,
mm-hmm.
that would be a wonderful thing.
And maybe some other groups in Washington, D.C. operating in a bipartisan manner.
That would really be a miracle.
Well, I do hope that the commission maintains its focus like a laser on this issue and that the bipartisan nature continues where, you know, I think the American people could be encouraged by the fact that there are people coming from different political backgrounds, different geographical backgrounds, and religious backgrounds, as you pointed out, but absolutely committed to this issue of religious freedom. And that, quite frankly, is encouraging.
It is.
Commissioner Manchin, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for honoring me and inviting me to be on the show. I appreciate it.
All right. That's Commissioner Gail Manchin of West Virginia as one of my co-commissioners on the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. All right. When we come back, the Vice President of Policy here at the Family Research Council, Travis Weber, joins me. He's also the director of the Center for Religious Liberty. A new publication coming out. We're going to talk about that and dig a little bit deeper in this year's report. Don't go away. Coming back right after this.
Happy birthday to you.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy birthday, dear.
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
When you look at what is going on in our country and culture today, do you often ask, what can I do? Well, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on October 11th through 13th in Washington, D.C., and join thousands of Americans just like you who want to change the culture in a way that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Mike Pompeo, Kirk Cameron, Dana Loesch, and Ben Carson. In addition, there will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview, and informational sessions focused on the topics of life, religious liberty, the LGBT movement, national security, the realities of socialism, and more. On October 11th through 13th, stand with thousands of Values voters to restore our great nation. Registration is now open. Don't miss the early bird price of $99. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com. By the way, if you would like to get a copy of the USURF report, the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom that I was just talking about with Gail Manchin, fellow commissioner, you can go to the website, the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom website, which is USCIRF.com, or easy, just go to TonyPerkins.com. We've got links over there. Speaking of this report, there are some overlaps with a new report that the Family Research Council has just put out from our Center for Religious Liberty. The issue of blasphemy, apostasy, and anti-conversion laws, which are used to really stifle religious freedom. Travis Weber, Vice President for Public Policy here at the Family Research Council and oversees the Center for Religious Liberty, joins me to talk about this new publication that actually identifies some of these areas that the USURF Commission report identifies as well. Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
Now, one of the areas that the USURF Commission identified as problematic in certain countries like Burma, Iran, Pakistan, Russia, Saudi Arabia, Sudan, Afghanistan, India, Malaysia, countries that have these apostasy laws, blasphemy, and anti-conversion laws. Explain for listeners what those laws are, what they do, and how they're stifling religious freedom.
Sure. So apostasy laws say that you cannot convert away from Islam and apostatize to other religions, and they enforce this through the law. Blasphemy laws say you cannot insult religion broadly and generally, and they punish insults to religion. Anti-conversion say you can't convert away from a majority religion or the religion that the state wants to keep people within. So they're all restrictions on how we understand religious freedom, meaning the freedom to choose your faith and live out that faith. And that includes the right to change your faith. So these are very problematic. As you mentioned, there's overlap between what USURF is doing and what we report here at FRC. we found that that 75 countries, that's nearly 40% of the world's countries, include one or more of these types of laws. 18 with apostasy laws, 72 with blasphemy laws, and 6 with anti-conversion laws. These are numbers that show a significant portion of the world's population living under regimes which do not respect religious freedom.
Now, you have a report. The Center for Religious Liberty has a new report out that has just been released on this topic. Talk about it.
On this topic. The title is Apostasy, Blasphemy, and Anti-Conversion Laws. Pretty straightforward. We've released this through our Center for Religious Liberty, by which we are continually trying to focus on the issue of religious liberty both at home and abroad. Folks can find this report at frc.org/ABA laws. That's our website with a /ABA laws. And please, we encourage folks to go to the website, download the report, read the report, because it's pretty extensive and is a lot more than we can cover right here. We've got nearly 50 pages of material. And, we want people to read about these situations around the world and the people they affect. We have examples of where there have been enforcement under these laws and impact on the culture. People will both be familiar with some of the names in here: Miriam Ibrahim, Raymond Koh in Malaysia, and Abdul Rahman in Afghanistan. So we highlight how this impacts people in the report. We really hope people will reference this and understand its role in religious liberty.
Now, this is a key component of religious freedom. In fact, if you go back to the 1948 Universal Declaration of Human Rights from the United Nations, which the United States helped drive, actually, it was Ms. Roosevelt who helped make this a reality. Article 18, which, by the way, many of these countries that we just named are signatories to this declaration, but Article 18 says everyone has the right to freedom of thought, conscience, and religion. The right includes freedom to change his religion or belief, and freedom, either alone or in community with others and in public and private, to manifest his religion or beliefs in teaching, practice, worship, and observance. With these types of laws in place, you can't do that.
Absolutely. And we actually included that provision in the introduction to this report because it sets out the standard that we're trying to work towards internationally, and a standard that cannot be achievable when you have these laws in place around the world and when they're enforced. Sometimes a country may have a mild provision on one of these laws, but the cultural weight against apostasy is so great that there are mobs that form. People are punished extrajudicially. So we monitor the cultural impact and the legal impact and enforcement of these laws. But Article 18, crucial to understand what we're trying to work towards in the area of religious liberty. Again, a lot of material in here. 75 countries around the world that we've explained how these countries have such laws in these areas and how they work. So we really hope folks will use this resource.
One final question for you, Travis Weber, before we're going to move. I'm going to bring in just a few moments, I'm going to have Peter Sprigg, Senior Fellow for Policy Studies here at the Family Research Council, join us on really something that's pressing, a bill that's going to be in committee tomorrow. I want to talk with him about that. So that you're aware of it, folks. This is one of those that you're going to have to take action on. But before Travis leaves, Travis, just put it, directly to the folks here that are listening. A lot of people saying, why do I care what happens in Burma or Iran or Pakistan as it pertains to these anti-conversion laws? Why should that matter to me?
Tony, if we as Americans know that we're free to walk out our front door, encounter a neighbor on the street and share what we believe about God, the gospel of Jesus Christ. We're free to do that. Our laws protect that. Our culture protects it. At least our law and our culture have protected these historically, even though we need to fight for them. This is foundational to how we live, how we understand religious freedom, how we understand our obligation to share our faith. Everyone should be protected to do that. Everyone should be protected regardless of their faith. We must have that freedom. Yet in so many places, these are the laws that are restricting that very freedom. Right now in eastern Syria, the Syriac Democratic Council area controlled by that entity in eastern Syria in the post-civil war is working towards these types of freedoms for the first time in that area of the Middle East. Historically, people would have been prevented from converting away from Islam. This is an example of where we're seeing positive movement and an example of people working towards what we have here. So it's important to understand for people to know that when they value their ability to share their faith here, they have something many around the world don't have, fellow believers and those of other faiths, and we should work towards that for their sake.
Well, and quite frankly, this goes hand in glove when it comes to, as Christians, our mandate to share the gospel. Evangelicals, I mean, that's where the term comes from, evangelize, to share the gospel. You can't do that if you are trying to share the gospel in countries that do not allow conversion or have these apostasy laws. And so as Christians, you know, we're one of the few religions that understand man, and I say man in the universal sense, their freedom of choice. That's all we're fighting for. They don't have to choose it. We're not mandating it. We're just saying every man, woman, and child should have the opportunity to make a choice as to whether or not they follow God.
Very true. And this is important for people to understand. We're supporting law and policy here, which allows everyone to choose their faith and live it out. So while as Christians, we want people to know what we know about God, we want the law to protect their ability to not follow that if they don't want to. But part of that, as we mentioned, is our ability to share our faith. That same ability others need in law too. The law and policy is what we're working on here. Now, separately, our spiritual obligation, we all know we need to share that with people, but we want the law to protect everyone.
Well, and we want the law to enable us to share.
Exactly.
And these laws inhibit that. Yeah. Travis Weber, thanks so much for joining us. I know you've got to run to the White House for a meeting going on in my stead, so tell them all I said hello.
Okay, thank you, Tony.
All right, I'll excuse you from the studio. Well, let me Travis is leaving the studio. Let me bring in Dr. Peter Sprigg, senior I was just making you an honorary doctor there for a moment. Peter Sprigg, senior fellow for policy studies here at the Family Research Council. Peter, you had an op-ed that appeared today in one of the Washington papers regarding a piece of legislation that is a top priority for Nancy Pelosi. It is the Equality Act. It's going to be in markup or in a committee hearing tomorrow. Business community is behind this, saying this would be good for business. You say not so fast.
Right. This op-ed in the Washington Examiner I wrote it in response to a letter from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which is considered sort of the symbol of mainstream American business. They actually wrote a letter to Congress endorsing this bill, the Equality Act, which would add sexual orientation and gender identity as special protected categories in virtually every federal civil rights law. And they seem to be buying into this argument that, there's all kinds of arguments, obviously, that LGBT activists make in support of this type of law. But from a business perspective, there are some people who actually argue that these laws are good for the economy. And I knew from previous research that there's no empirical support for this. So I went back again. We have sort of a natural experiment to test this because there are 20 states that already have adopted laws like this at the state level. Only 20, that's a minority. Most states have rejected this idea when it's been proposed at their state level. But 20 states do have these sexual orientation, gender identity laws. So I looked at those 20 states and saw how they fared on various measures of economic well-being in state-by-state rankings. And these are main rankings done by CNBC, by Forbes, by USA Today, and so forth. And there is simply no correlation between the existence of these sexual orientation, gender identity laws and the health of a state's economy. None whatsoever. No particular disadvantage to having those laws in terms of these rankings, but certainly no advantage either. And so it's time to just put this argument that somehow this is good for business to rest.
Well, Peter, let me transition away from the business, although I'm going to come back to that in a minute because I'm seeing this. Well, I don't want to go there just yet. I want to talk about no impact on business or the economy, but what about the family? What about education? What will this bill, the Equality Act that Nancy Pelosi is pushing, what will it impact?
Well, it's interesting when you're talking with Travis about these blasphemy laws. And in a sense, you could almost see this as a blasphemy law relating to the LGBT movement. In other words, it would be illegal to take any kind of position that is in opposition to the ideology of the LGBT movement. You would not be able to people like Jack Phillips, who actually won his case at the Supreme Court, would probably lose all across the country if this were law, because people would not be have the freedom to make their own choices to operate their business as they see fit. And there is no religious exemption to this law. In fact, they specifically forbid the application of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act to any of the practices covered by this.
Well, let me stop you right there. How often has Congress said, we're going to pass a law and religious freedom laws do not pertain to this?
Yeah, this is, well, it's completely unprecedented, and it basically guts the whole point of the of RFRA, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which was not to give a license to discriminate. That's the way our opponents describe it, but to give a balancing test that courts could use in cases where a person asserts that there's a conflict between a government action and their religious liberty. It doesn't have anything to do with sexual orientation or gender identity specifically, but the LGBT activists fear or believe that this could be used to thwart their agenda, and therefore they're basically gutting that law altogether.
Is the Equality Act a threat to parental rights?
It's a serious threat to parental rights, and a lot of the attention, we have concerns about the sexual orientation portion of it, but a lot of attention is going to the gender identity portion, because all of the horror stories that we've heard just, you know, within the last 3 or 4 years about the transgender movement would be, institutionalized nationwide by this, with the transgender bathrooms where men would be allowed to use women's restrooms if that's how they identify. Nobody would be able to challenge them. If you did challenge them, you'd be guilty of violating the law of discrimination. And if parents, parents would not be informed if their children in their schools were transitioning to another gender identity. Preference would go entirely with the student, even though they're minor. Parents' rights would be basically out the window with respect to things like that.
Peter, we just have 2 minutes left. I want to transition back to the issue of business, because the Chamber of Commerce is the one pushing for this. We've got big business pushing for this. And I look back to my time when I was in public office. And usually I got a very high rating from the business community, and that's because they rated us based on regulatory policy and tax policy, which was good for business. And what I'm finding increasingly that the business community, the chamber, looking to Republicans for favorable regulatory tax policy, but in bed with the Democrats when it comes to their liberal social policy.
Yes, and it's ironic, because I think that business is basically succumbing to blackmail here, that the LGBT activists have said, you know, we're going to accuse you of being hateful bigots if you don't support our agenda. And they don't want that publicity, so they're going along with it. But as you said, the left who supports this kind of legislation is not going to support the kind of policies that are going to be helpful to business and the economy.
I think it's time for the Republican Party to find a new partner. I think the big business chamber, I think they're gone. In fact, I actually think, and I don't have time, we don't have time to talk about this, but I think many of the trial lawyers who are usually pitted against big business have more of a sense of moral values than big business. I think we've lost big business in this country. You don't have to comment on that, Peter, but I will. Folks, we are just about out of time. I want to thank you so much for joining us today. A lot of resources found at TonyPerkins.com. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you could do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.
Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.